Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
WDEV presents House Calls Vermont. Hosts Jim Bradley and Chris West share their knowledge and expertise on topics specific to the opportunities and challenges of building and renovating in Vermont. Brought to you by Haddon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury, Shamrock Painting, Painting and Custom Wood Finishing, ShamrockPaintingCompany.com. RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions, for all things basement-y. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association, homebuildersvt.com. Poly Construction in South Burlington, one call does it all, online at polyconstruction.com. Your participation is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 1-877-291-8255. Now, House Calls Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Good afternoon. This is Chris West with House Calls Vermont. I'm here with my co-host and colleague, Jim Bradley.
Hello, everybody.
And this week we're going to be talking about roofs. And the reason we're going to be talking about roofs is because I'm seeing a lot of icicles out there. And we, although we talked about roofs like 15 weeks ago, I think it bears repeating. So we're going to jump into that and talk about warm roofs and cathedral roofs and flat roofs and what we need to know in order to be able to talk to a roofer when they come over and they're giving us, you know, how can we save you money on replacing your roof, and how that may not be the best way to jump in. But first we need to just talk about when we first started the show, we were given a season of shows, a 6-month run of shows, and we're coming up to the end of that run. After another 3 shows, not 3 weeks because there's some sports going on in between, but we're going to be giving up our spot to the regular spring garden show people, which we're very happy for. It's a great show. And we're going to be transitioning our show over to a YouTube live kind of thing. We don't have a time or date for that. And whether we'll be coming back to WDEV in the fall, we'll be talking with the management about that. We're very excited and thankful for the time we've had here, and we want to thank everyone who's an active listener. And by the way, if you have a question, please feel free to call in at 802-244-1777, and we'll keep you up to date on exactly what's going on with us in the future. We are also wanting to remind you about some of the things we've been talking about recently that have to do with legislation. So I'm going to pass it to Jim. Jim, why don't you bring us back up to speed on what we're trying to get people information about and what we'd like them to do?
Certainly. Well, bills. The legislature is active right now, very active. I've had an opportunity over the last couple of weeks to be in front of several different subcommittees about how different legislation is being brought to the forefront and regarding funding of different projects, regarding different laws. One we talked about 2 weeks ago was contractor registry. It's basically been the opportunity, or it's been the desire to have this opportunity once again to get this across the finish line, to have some type of requirement for contractor registry, which would allow there to be a better standard, an elevated standard for our industry with respect to proper business practices of contracts, having the right insurance, making sure that everybody's on the same playing field, but also an education component, because, you know, that's why we do this show, is to get the education out there for not just homeowners, but also builders to understand how to do do things correctly. Now, with that, Chris and myself have spoken with at least four different builders in the last week with different building science issues where they were trying to do the right thing, and thankfully they called us, but they were trying to do the right thing, and they had failures on brand new buildings and brand new renovation work, and they had to find solutions. So right now, this bill, Bill 157, is in the committee with your local local senator here, representative, Tom Stevens, out of Waterbury, and you certainly can get a hold of him by going online and also calling your, if you're listening to another part of the state, calling your local representative and saying how important it is that you have a voice in the contractor registry issue. At the same time, there's the weatherization side. There's a big weatherization bill being considered right now, up to $25 million to spend towards weatherization projects over the next 2 years. Ultimately, there's a 10-year long-term goal to see 120,000 homes in the state of Vermont.
So that particular point is very important because that is part of the Comprehensive Energy Plan, which was passed by the legislature almost 10 years ago. And all of the tightening up of the energy codes every 3 years to keep in step with the International Energy Conservation Code, which is an international code, that's all part of our commitment to hitting these goals, which include every house built after 2030 needs to be net zero. Well, we're nowhere close to that right now.
No.
So how are we going to get a group of builders who know how to build to zero energy? How are we going to have codes that are in place that when we build houses to the net energy, we're not building mold boxes that are going to fall apart in 5 years? And how are we going to make sure that we spend this $24 million over the next 2 years for weatherization in a way that makes the houses better?
Oh, and it doesn't create issues because, you know, once you tighten up a house, you change the dynamics and how it operates. And
house so, as a whole system.
Exactly. And so, once again, we go back to health and safety first, durability second, and then understand that you're going to have the energy efficiency as a rider in the car, if you will.
And as Jim always says, once you do the energy efficiency stuff right, then you're already dealing with the health and safety issues. Those things are all part of the same package.
Yeah, we would not want to see a bunch of good money spent in a way trying to solve one issue while creating other health and safety issues or durability issues because we've seen the mold factories. Oh, gosh. The part of what we're talking about today with roofs, you know, a totally foamed-in building, when I say foamed, I mean insulated with foam, turned into a mold factory within 12 years. And this is $1 million home. And it's like, okay, how do you spend that money to fix that when you're talking about stripping everything off the house, basically a gut retrofit to make this right again?
Yep.
That becomes really expensive. So multiply that by 120,000. We don't want to see those problems. And yet there is a way to do it right. There is a way to still be cost effective and get the results we're looking for on all levels.
But it's not something you can do based on building science knowledge from 20 years ago.
Exactly.
We've got to make sure that we're training the people who we're going to be giving the money to do these weatherization projects in a way that will create a safe, healthy, and durable house into the future. And when we make houses tighter, we're trapping moisture. We're making them more energy efficient, but we're possibly trapping moisture. So we've got to be very, very careful about how we move forward this way. And fortunately, the Home Builders Association of Vermont, we've got our people up there. Jim has been testifying in front of the most important people on these various bills. We've got Guy Payne from the Sustainable Energy Outreach Network down in Brattleboro. They're on board.
Efficiency Vermont.
We've got a lot of players who are saying we've got the right information. Let's make sure we move forward. And we've got to make sure. Look, we have a citizen legislature, right? We don't have a professional legislature that has positive sides and it's got negative sides. And one of the negative sides is we're asking these people to know a whole lot about so many things and making super important decisions. So having people like Jim and like Guy and like Richard Fazy from
yes.
Energy Futures Group, we all get up there and we try to give them the right information. But there are competing interests that are saying, wait a second, you're going too far. You're going too fast. Well, maybe we it's okay to posit that we're going too far and too fast, but we also have this law, the Comprehensive Energy Plan, mm-hmm. which says we're not going fast enough if those are our goals. We may have to shift those goals, but if those are our goals, then we need to make these things happen in a good, safe way as within the next 10 years.
And one of those things that you can see with a home, one of the canaries in the coal mine is what we're talking about today, is going to be the icicles. Now, that's an indicator. Now, it used to be when I lived in warmer climates, when I would see icicles, I'd think, oh, the picturesque winter scene. And it just brought warm feelings with cold ice. But it brought warm feelings of, that just looks so nice. But then now you get up here and you get into the whole science behind it and what's really going on there, you realize this is not a good thing whatsoever. I see it now when I see icicles on the side, and I've ruined it for my family. They
mine
can't see,
too.
Yeah, they can't see it the same way anymore, because I say when you look at the icicles on the sides of a roof, you should be seeing dollar signs.
Lost
dollar signs, not just because the heat loss, but also because the durability issues, the structural damage that it's causing behind the scenes.
Yep.
And so looking at it the same way, you just can't anymore. But what causes that? You know, what causes that icing? Sometimes it's just the fact that you've got a dark-colored roof. Your building performs just nice, but it melts a little bit of the ice, and then it refreezes when it gets to the eave.
Because the sun heats up the shingles.
Exactly.
But that's not usually what we're seeing
right now.
Because we have a foot or a foot and a half of snow. There's no sun getting onto those shingles.
So what's underneath that is you've got heat loss into the attic structure and into the roof structure that's hitting the underside of the sheathing. And the snow that's sitting on top of it is working as an insulator.
It is, yeah.
But it's allowing that bottom layer of the snow to become liquid, liquid water again.
Yep.
And then it runs from down, because sometimes people say, well, I only want you to fix the eaves because that's where the problem is. It's happening on that whole roof plane.
Yep. Yep.
When that warms the roof plane up, turns it to liquid, and then it flows underneath the snow till it gets to the bottom of the roof along the eaves, then starts to refreeze again.
Because that's where it's cold. There's no more hot air in that attic to keep it liquid.
And then as the ice begins to build up more and more, it not only starts to drip downward and form the icicle that you see, it also starts to back up. And when it does, it creates what we call an ice dam. So it creates a pocket where it blocks the water from flowing all the way out. It keeps it liquefied underneath the snow, and then it starts to back up underneath the roofing material.
Yep.
We've seen it bad enough to where not only is it forming the icicles, dripping inside on the ceiling below, we've also seen, and you may have this on your house, where it's coming down through the siding. You think, well, how the heck did it get through the siding? It's because it's dripped down the wall assembly and then daylighted again through the actual siding, which is a real big problem.
Yep. So just to get you using our nomenclature, because we've been throwing these terms at you, the reason that the air gets into the attic in the first place is because warm air is buoyant. That buoyant air goes up and pushes against the top plane, what we call the top pressure plane, which is the ceiling of the top floor of the house. Let's say you live in a two-story colonial. That ceiling, when you're on the second floor looking up at, you're in your bed, you're looking up the ceiling, that's the top pressure plane. There are microscopic and sometimes less than microscopic, bigger than microscopic gaps in that plane. There are holes where there are light fixtures. There are holes where there are CO detectors. There's holes where there's a bath fan. And in those holes, through those holes, all that warm air pushes out. It's just like having an upside-down bathtub full of water, and you've got these little cracks in it. Well, the water's going to come out. That hot air is going to go up. It's going to hit the underside of the attic, a sheathing, and that's going to melt the snow. That's the beginning. So it's pretty obvious to me. How do you fix that? Well, you fix it by making sure that you don't have leakage from inside the house where you want the warm air, because that's where we live, getting up into the attic. And that's where we say the dollar signs. That's why icicles are dollar signs. If you go out, I was looking, you can even see there's a duplex that was built in Jericho. Right,
yeah, brand new.
Brand new house.
Yeah.
It's a red duplex right where Plains Road meets Skunk Hollow.
Not to name any names.
I don't know who built it, but all I'm saying is that one half of it doesn't have any icicles
None.
At all. And until last week, midweek, where the owner came out and ripped the icicles off, the other side did have icicles. There's the exact same building, but one had the air sealing done right and the other didn't. I don't even have to walk into that house to know that that's what's wrong with it. So if you have a new construction, there's no excuse for having icicles.
Exactly.
If you have an older house, it could be, you know, I have slopes, I've got all kinds of other things going on that may make it more difficult and more expensive to fix, but it still is a heat loss due to the stack effect. Warm air rises, hits the underside of the sheathing, melts the snow, that water runs down until it can refreeze because the temperatures are then again below the freezing point that's going to happen at the eaves, and that's why icicles happen.
And so, you know, what we're going to do now is we're up on our first break, but when we come back, we're going to be speaking more about some of the issues that can be attributed to an improper roof design, maybe not selecting the right roofing material, looking at the structure of the roof, because there's a lot of things, especially with the snow load that we have in the state of Vermont at times, we have to look at how well it's designed, and retrofitting a roof or an attic assembly, can that really change the way that it's been functioning for the last 100-plus years?
And we have, as we often do on the phone, our good friend Steve Spatz from Efficiency Vermont. Steve, how's it going?
Not too bad, guys. Good to hear your voices again. How are you doing today?
Can you look out of your window from your house and see another house with icicles dripping off it right now?
Well, I can have flashbacks about my own house. I did a lot of work on my own attic this fall, which this is my first winter without exactly the problems you're talking about, because it had been a long time coming before we needed to finally bit the bullet and got a new roof on and did a lot of things that I preach every day. So,
excellent.
It's been a transformative winter on my end.
They call that living the dream, don't we?
Oh, it was a dream project, exactly, crawling around and mucking around and moving through, but it's necessary work, and I'm quite happy with the outcome.
Well, one thing you just mentioned, Steve, that causes me a little concern for our listeners is you did more than just replace your roof, because I don't know how many calls I've had with people say, I just replaced my roof last year, and I still have icicles. Well, the roof doesn't solve the problem. Or switching from a shingled roof
to a metal roof
because it slides off,
exactly.
That just masks the problem. So with you, what did you in your house, what did you actually do?
Well, most of my roof area in my house was 2x6 rafters that were half filled with fiberglass insulation and improper venting from when the house was built and a lot of exposed roof area. And, as soon as it snowed, even in the fall, as soon as we started to get frosty mornings, you could see the melt patterns already showing up on the roof deck of where the heat loss is coming. We had a lot of interior walls that were open up into those cavities in the attic up above. One of the crazy things is actually we had two gable end vents, so two rectangular vents on either end of the house that kind of vented the small little attic flap that was there. And after a good long stretch of cold weather in the winter, those vents would be covered in frost. You could see it from the ground. It would be all caked with frost from the amount of air leaking up through our attic into the through our ceiling up into the attic above. So,
how old is your house? Just to put it in context.
My house was built in the 1980s.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So
we've been here 16 years, and we've been waiting on some things and some plans, longer-term plans, to address the roof, and some circumstances aligned to get after that this fall and finally took care of the problems. But it was one of the perfect scenarios. We have a very shallow pitch roof in the back, and it would build up ice a couple feet thick in the winter, and I'm not a man who's fearful of heights, but I hate getting up on that roof to try to get that snow off. And that
dangerous moments, huh?
How many collarbone breaks are there during the course of a winter? And is that actually a good indicator of how much snow we have, the ratio of collarbone breaks?
Oh, that would be an interesting analysis, too. I just want to point out the collarbone is the most broken body in the human body. Broken bone in the human body across the world.
And maybe
mostly bicycles, but yeah.
And falling off roofs.
Yeah.
So, that's one of those things. Just because you can get up there and ship
should
that
you,
away,
right.
Should you?
Yeah.
Exactly. But if someone came and called up Efficiency Vermont, Steve, or you just, were talking to somebody, what would you direct them to do if they're saying, lamenting the fact that, oh my gosh, this ice just won't stop, on my roof? Mm-hmm. What do I do?
Well, there's a lot you can learn as a homeowner just by looking and hearing, listening to your show here today and getting some of the indicators from you and learning things from us as we can talk to you if you call in to our customer support folks or talk to a consultant. The ice is always a major indicator. You know, as you can start to, as you two both well know, you can identify melting patterns of snow on your roof that kind of indicates you have some problems going on. But even just some basic things around the house. Do you have an attic hatch? If you do have an attic hatch, what is it? Is it just a piece of drywall, or is there something more substantial there? Do you have a pull-down stairway to access your attic? Are you using your attic as a storage unit? Your attic should be for storing insulation, not for storing luggage.
Exactly.
And holiday get items and things like that. Bath fans, you know, if you do have an attic access that you can get up into, just poking your head up in there and looking around and seeing what you see, you can see indications on the underside of the roof plywood that can tell you if you've got some problems. If you have a bath fan in your bathroom and you go up into the attic and you don't see ductwork going outside of the house, you use your bath fan probably ducting up into your attic and making the problem even worse.
Cannot say how often we've seen that.
Oh, my own house had it. I mean, we were mold farmers just because
right.
somebody thought paying that extra $15 for that bath fan vent was just too exorbitant back in the 80s when they built our house.
And we know the price of mold just tanked, so having a mold farm is not
exactly.
a good idea.
So you can be an ice farmer.
Cheese in your attic.
Yeah, you can be an ice farmer and a mold farmer at the same time. But when building science goes bad,
better hobbies and better ways to make a living.
Absolutely. So from a consumer's point of view, if they have icicles, they should call Efficiency Vermont's hotline or go on the website and look for a contractor who's in the EEN network and get them to come out and do an assessment and do the right thing.
A whole home assessment.
A whole home assessment.
There.
Yep.
Start there, you know, an often seen remedy around Vermont is ice pans on the eave of a roof.
Yeah.
You know, a roofer will come in and remove the first couple feet of shingles or slate or whatever the roofing material may be and put some metal pans up there as a way to resolve your ice panning problem when, as you mentioned, it just is a slicker, easier surface with less friction for the ice to roll off.
And it's so much more efficient to add to that an electric resistance heater to really spend the money and melt that ice faster.
But you're hitting on some really good points for the average homeowner to be aware of. Is it's the heat energy loss,
yes,
the comfort, and it's also really the durability. Because I mean, if these things go unchecked for a long time, I mean, what I had to do on my own house here is I had to replace all of the plywood on my roof decks. I had to replace the entire roof deck because it was black.
Same here. Yeah.
From all the years of air leaking. So, you know, that takes your roofing shingle replacement to a whole different level.
Absolutely.
When you have to do that. So
definitely. Well, Steve, we have quite a few calls here backing up right now, but we really appreciate you joining us again this week. Next week, there's going to be a sports playoff, so we won't be here. But the week after that, I'm sure we're going to have you back if you're available. But we really appreciate you joining us once again this week.
All right. Well, good to talk to you both. Take care and have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too, Steve.
Thank you so much. And right now we have a call from Nate in Lincoln. And Nate, go ahead with your question.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Going well, sir. Thanks.
Good. First off, I just wanted to say thanks for doing the show. I've been an efficiency and weatherization contractor for a while, and it's so much fun to think that the nerdiness is cool enough that it can be on the radio now.
Exactly.
Really appreciate that. Just two quick comments. One, you were talking about air leakage up through the attic plane. Another one that I see so often that's a huge one is through the inner spaces of the walls, the interstitial chimneys of the walls themselves, as it were.
Good point.
And that can be a huge one. You can go around, you can air seal the light fixtures and all these holes that you see, but in between one side of the wall and the other, there's 6 inches or whatever it is, and oftentimes that just goes right up in there. So that's another spot that can be a little harder to get.
Yeah, the top plates of framing it cannot be missed. We do, when I write a report, an audit report, and we're talking about top plane, pressure plane penetrations, we talk about penetrations and top plates of framing, including that outside wall. You're absolutely right. It's really important. You wouldn't think that there's enough air moving up there, but if you have a 16th of an inch gap, and that gap is 40 feet long, you're talking about like 2 feet of open space in your wall going right up into the attic.
Totally. And once you do a blower door test and actually feel that air, it's so much easier to visualize. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And Nate brings up a valid point, is the chimneys within the chimneys. You know, you a lot of times you'll have a chimney inside the actual thermal boundary of the house that goes up through the attic, but then they keep the combustibles away from it most times, and they create this dead space around the chimney that in the inner part of the house, what you're looking at, you usually see a nice sheetrock wall.
It's a chase, right? Yes. It's a chase built around a chimney, but they don't ever seal that properly up in the attic.
Oh, they'll stuff fiberglass there, but they don't actually take the time to seal it right, and so you've got this chimney that's taking that warmer air and pushing it into the attic, not from the firebox itself, but from that warmth that's generated around the fire assembly.
Yep.
Yeah, totally. And one last quick little plug, if I could. I've been writing a column for the Green Energy Times. I imagine you guys are familiar with that publication.
Yes, sir.
And it's titled "A Bunch of BS," asterisk building science, of course.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, the latest one is actually about reading the snow melt print on a roof to see where the leakage is in your house. There are a couple about why does the condensation form on the windows, et cetera, et cetera. So if anybody's interested, they're in the issues of Green Energy Times.
I'm a big fan of Green Energy Times. I've written a number of articles for them myself. It's a great organization and a great way to get information. Thanks for bringing that up, Nate. And I'll just put in a plug for the VBRA. If you're in your company are not a member of the VBRA, get onto our website. And if you think it's a value added for your company, we'd love to have you as a member.
And Nate,
awesome. Cool. I'll check it out.
And Nate, are you part of the Efficiency Vermont network as well?
Yep. I am through Silver Maple Construction and also Zone 6 Energy. Yep.
Wonderful. Yeah, just wanted you to be able to get your name out there at the same time.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, thanks for the call. We have Earl in, it looks like, York. How's it going? How can we help you today?
I had a couple of questions. So we have a module we bought brand new in 97, double wide.
Yep.
And many years ago, my son was a young man. I heard some noise in the wall. It turned out to be some mice had sunflower seeds. And instead of tearing the sheetrock apart, I went outside and started tearing the vinyl siding off, only to find eighth-inch foam board was the only insulation besides, you know, the regular pink insulation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did button that side up with some Tyvek and put all the existing stuff back on. But when the furnace comes on, I think due to that lack of insulation or sealant, the furnace comes on, we have cold air come out from the outlets in the wall.
Yep.
So my plan in the future when I get some extra money is take all the siding off and somehow sheath it with plywood or something. I was just wondering what your take on that would be to make it more efficient and maybe burn some less fuel oil.
So what? Just to clarify, so the assembly for a mobile home is usually a 2x4 or 2x6 wall with some kind of either sheetrock or paneling on the inside. On the outside, there's some kind of sheathing. That's going to be we've seen everything, right? We've seen plywood. We've seen OSB. We've seen homosote. We've seen exterior sheetrock. So when you went and you pulled back the siding and you said you saw this eighth inch of this foam board, do you know what was behind that?
I did have some pink insulation in between the studs.
So that basically is it then. That's
so the foam board is your sheathing.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
And even that wasn't buttoned down very good.
Yeah, it sounds like what you did, and you did yourself a favor as far as air leakage is concerned. You put on a wrap of Tyvek. You made sure it was pretty well air sealed. And what's telling me that is when you turn on your heating system that you're getting a suck. Right, so the air that is feeding your heating system is depressurizing the house, and that's reinfiltrating, and it's coming through your electrical sockets and other gaps. It says to me that you've probably done a good job at air sealing that outside, but that the ceiling and the floor may not still be so that you know air sealed, so that the air is coming through that way.
But also with that
location. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
That location was only one section of the house. I didn't do the whole house.
Okay.
Yep. But once again, what you've noticed as well is with the outlets, when the air is coming in like that, you're depressurizing the house. So what type of heating system do you have?
It's a force hot air.
So it's a force hot air. So it's okay. So it's and is it going to be the exhaust? Is it atmospheric where it passively goes up, or is it going to be one where you've maybe got a direct vent where it's pushing it out, or is it one that's going to be balanced where it brings in air as it's also exhausting? You know, seal combustion unit is what we'd call that. Do you know, sir?
Yes, yeah, it's a standard mobile home furnace, so it has fresh air coming from the ceiling. I believe it's got two vents.
Okay, so that's atmospheric.
But with that, you know, the thing about outlets, you can address those as well. You got to be really careful about this. We do have something on our website that shows that.
On the YouTube channel,
On YouTube channel. And it'll give you a demonstration on how to seal those up. Do not use those foam gaskets. They don't work. You know, granted, I know a lot of people sell those, but it doesn't block all the holes, and so you still get the air transfer. So you can address that. But the thing that concerns me the most about your house is, and I've found other actual, just regular homes too, built this way in Vermont, is where there's no sheathing used. Yep. That's structural. And that's really what's really important. Now, granted, you can put mechanical devices, strapping on the different framing members to hold things together to get the racking strength you're looking for. But really, the best way to do that is going to be with proper sheathing, whether it's OSB or it's going to be plywood.
Or an exterior sheetrock.
Great sheetrock. Yep. And you could do something like that, and that's going to really make the house more structurally sound, because I'd hate to have a really bad storm event and there be an issue there. Then that's unfortunate that they didn't go the extra mile and just do proper building construction practices.
And we do have a lot of experience looking at mobile homes, single wides, double wides, and they're almost all built in this one area of Pennsylvania. And they are, your house is from the mid-90s, so they were not required to be to any kind of code or standards that we now have in place. So where you said you were in New York?
Oh, Hyde Park.
Hyde Park. The name was kind of hidden from me. So Hyde Park. We are huge fans of, before you do something, get an expert in to make sure that you're doing the right thing. There are a number of programs, depending on your incomes levels, that can pay for an audit if you haven't already had one. If you don't know how to get those, if you send an email to us at housecallsvt@gmail.com, we can put you in touch with someone of one of those programs who might be able to set up a low-cost or free energy audit, so that when you do go ahead and do some work, whether it's your own work by yourself or work that you're having done by a professional, that you're doing the work that is, you know, that would prioritize do this first, do that second, do this third. And we always recommend that analysis before moving forward.
And if you do get somebody who's part of the EEN organization, the Efficiency Excellence Network with Efficiency Vermont, they can allow you to tap into some of the rebate monies that are still available to help offset the cost of the audit at the same time, should you go ahead with the work. Even if it's a DIY program where you're going to do the work yourself, if you have it looked at, tested first, and then retested after the work is performed, then that allows you to have access to those funds, which can definitely be a good incentive to move forward.
Yep.
Yep. And the second thing was our house is new in 97. Our shingles probably, are a little expired. So this last fall, we laid steel over it. But I had these four vents on each side that I knocked off, nailed down some screen over it. And I noticed when I did that, the roof has like blown in paper insulation.
Yep.
So I'm probably assuming I probably should have, or at some point, add insulation. Like you say, with steel roofs or even the shingle, I'm getting some ice buildup and drippage.
Yep.
Well, first and foremost, do you have access to the attic still?
Because we know that the pitches on those roofs are very low, and they're oftentimes with double wides, you'll have part of the ceiling will be a cathedral ceiling. So if you're standing in the room and you look up, it's not flat; it's got an angle to it, and some of it would be flat. And how much room is actually up there is usually pretty low and small on a mobile home.
Our whole house is cathedral.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. So it's probably at max a 2x6, maybe even 2x4, but 2x6 rafter. And if that was stuffed full without any rigid on the outside, you're talking about a maximum of R23 performance base, but actually performing like an R17. And that assembly should be an R50, like an R49 is code. So once again, before we would recommend you doing anything further, get someone in who can take a look at that and give you the opportunity to decide what the next step is based on their advice.
Because even if you had the opportunity, the space, if you will, to put 4 feet of cellulose or some other type of insulation on top of what exists without doing the proper air sealing first, then it's not going to function.
And
it's
and be probably venting, as we were always talking about. You've got to vent an attic.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I screened over each floor vent on each side, and then, so, you know, in theory, it does vent up to the ridge in the steel, which goes up to the ridge cap. So I was debating if I needed to put vents on each end of the house as well.
One thing you don't want to do is you don't want to complicate the venting. If it's going to do it right, you got to make sure that at the soffit level, that there's soffit venting there, and that those are not painted over, blocked, or full of debris. And then that would go up to a ridge vent. It could go up to gable vents. Where people do make an error at times, many times, is they'll have duplicity of venting. They'll have gable vents, then they'll have a ridge vent and the soffit vents, and that's too much venting. It's just not that it's not going to allow it to function appropriately. So decide on what you're going to have. If the metal
roof, strategy you're going to choose for venting, yeah.
And if it, gable vents make the most sense, then certainly make sure that those are open and it's breathable and that there's not insulation stacked up against them that would prohibit the air from circulating.
And in the type, like in the 212 pitch roof that you probably have on your double wide, that we don't recommend a soffit and ridge because it's just too low for the stack effect to vent that properly.
Unless the wind's blowing. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So, once again, we'd love to give you more advice, but it kind of behooves us not to give advice unless we've seen it or had someone who has our experience to take a look and give you good advice, because there could be little things that are different or the way you're explaining it doesn't give us the picture we need to make a good recommendation. So that's how we'd move forward.
Okay. So you go to housecalls@vt.com?
It's housecalls. Housecallsvt@gmail.com is the email. If you send that to us, then we'll put you in touch with someone who runs these programs that can provide low-cost or no-cost energy audits based on your income.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, Earl. You have a good rest of your day.
You as well.
We are talking about roofs today.
And icicles.
And icicles and what causes those. But also we're looking at some of the theories behind what type of ventilation system should I have. A really well-ventilated roof or a non-ventilated roof. The difference between, you might have heard this before, a hot or a cold roof. When you have a cold roof assembly, that means you do have a ventilated space, and that way the roof will actually get cold. When you have a hot roof, that means you have no ventilation space. I used to be of the thought when I had heard some people say that, oh, yeah, you can definitely have a well-functioning hot roof. You just got to make sure it's really, really tight and it doesn't have any air leakage.
So that no moisture and nothing ever gets in there. It's going to be hermetically sealed from now until the end of time.
And it'll cause no problems whatsoever.
Ever.
And the reality that we're finding, and see, this is where I was talking to another contractor this morning on the way in, and he was mentioning, you know, it just seems like there's just so many different opinions in this, and, you know, which one's right? And here's the thing. What Chris and I are able to do when we go out, we've been to thousands of homes, literally, and we see what happens after the fact. You know, after the check is cleared, after somebody's lived in the house for a few years.
After the builder has closed shop and left.
Exactly. And then what's left behind and what works and what doesn't. So what we have seen, and this is also backed up by Joe Stieberg, who's one of the leading building science people in the nation, they would actually disassemble roof systems and building systems after they've been built for a while to see how they perform. And what they have found, that even in a perfectly sealed, foamed-in roof assembly, what they have found is that moisture still finds a way. It doesn't get transported necessarily by air leakage, convective transport, but instead it migrates through the building materials. And then it starts to rot things out. And
that vapor drive we've been talking about. You don't need air transport for moisture to move.
And Chris and I just saw a house a few weeks ago that was a totally foamed in roof system where the very same thing was happening. And this was $1 million plus home. And so it can happen to any type of home. But when you try to use that assembly, what we have found that it doesn't work well. So when solving some of these problems, we have seen that doing an overbuilt roof assembly where you have the original roof and then you have at least an inch and a half breathing channel on top of the roof that allows for any of that to be convected out and circulated out, vented out of the roof to protect the integrity of the roof long term.
Yep. Moisture sandwiches. We spoke about that 2 weeks ago when we were talking about vapor drive and membranes. Was that last week?
2 weeks.
2 weeks ago.
Yep.
So when we're building an assembly, we have to look at the vapor openness of every bit that's in that assembly, and then we need to make sure that it has a drying potential, as we call that, a way to dry in both directions if possible, and one direction at the very least. That's why we're promoting building a venting channel on top of the roof, so that you're actually building a roof on top of your roof that allows for that drying. Even if it's a hot roof, we still want the moisture to be able to be wicked away by an airstream. That airstream is a soffit and ridge airstream. As with anything, what was a 2.5-12 pitch?
Anything so less than that.
Anything less than that, you should not be using a soffit and ridge, but anything of that pitch or more, that's a 2.5-inch rise over a 1-foot run.
Mm-hmm.
That is what the science has showed us is enough for the stack effect to make that vent properly. We have Wade in Moortown calling in. We'll get back to more talk about roofs in just a second. Wade, how can we help you?
It's actually what you've just been talking about. I helped my neighbor build a house, and he decided to go over the foam, spray foam, in the walls, in the roof. And I guess there's different types of foam, right?
Yep,
yes.
There are two types of foam. Well, there are more than that, but when you're talking about spray foam, there's open-cell spray foam and there's closed-cell spray foam.
Is that for ventilation, you're saying?
No, this is just the insulation foam. There are vent channels that are called prop vents that are made out of a type of foam, but that's not an insulation, right? That's just a way to provide a venting channel.
Okay. So what he decided when he had people come in, they were going to put the channels in on the outside wall. And he said, no, just skip it and just fill the walls. So he filled the walls all the way from the outside plywood to the sheetrock on the inside.
Okay.
And what happened, of course, things started sweating. So you had water everywhere inside the walls.
Yep.
Because I went back a couple years later to put a vent in the wall for my bathroom, and the wall was all wet.
Yep.
So it sounds to me that, problem, actually.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. What you're talking about, instead of a roof venting channel, is what we call a rain screen, right? So that's where we build a venting channel on the outside of a wall, but it does the exact same thing. It allows for drying potential. And when we have a foamed wall assembly with no rigid foam on the outside, an open cell or closed cell foam, we can have moisture migration into the wall, vapor drive from the inside to the outside during the winter, and that can deposit on the sheathing and also on the studs, especially if there has been slight failures in the foam. When foam shrinks,
exactly,
and it separates from the studs, that can cause a lot of issues.
But also the studs will shrink because, you know, when you first build the assembly, there's a certain moisture content, and there's only one place in the nation that I've heard of that actually checks the moisture content of the assembly by code before they allow you to insulate.
Where is that?
That's in Seattle.
Ah.
Seattle, Washington.
Makes sense.
So with that, if you didn't do that, and let's say your lumber, because a schedule is a schedule, and you got to just frame it, get it the mechanicals in place, the electrical, the plumbing, and get it insulated and then sheetrocked and keep moving. But in that process, it doesn't allow for the assembly to dry appropriately. So let's say there is a higher moisture content.
Yeah, we call that construction moisture.
Yep.
The first 6 months of a house is drying out.
Yeah, 12 months.
Oh,
there's about 500 gallons of moisture in a 2,000 square foot home in the building materials that come out of the building materials in that first 12 months. And so with that, let's say you have a moist wall assembly, the framing that is, then you get it insulated really well, then it starts to dry. Then those frames premium members shrink and starts to pull away from the foam. And when it does, it creates this crack on the side of it where you can have that condensation happening, because the warm air that gets behind the sheetrock will then condense on the cold air that's coming through that crack.
With the first condensing layer,
yeah,
right?
And then it'll start to drip and it'll cause a whole host of problems. So, yeah, definitely making sure that the assembly is designed right and implemented correctly is hugely important.
Yeah. The other thing was, too, also, you use a rough cut all those old lumber.
Sure.
But half the lumber is still
green.
Was it dry?
Yeah, definitely. That's the very thing. I think that's probably what happened.
And you're covering it all up.
Yep. Exactly. And then you're covering it up and trapping it. Just like you said, Wade, you have this really well thought out. You are really understanding what we're talking about. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to show that. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling in.
And so, you know, going back again, whether or not we do a hot roof or a cold roof.
All roofs should be cold.
Should be ventilated, exactly.
At this point.
Yes. Because it's just that belt and suspenders and a clean pair of shorts guarantee that you're not going to have a problem with your assembly, because, you know, you're making this huge investment. And it's not just the building.
This is the most expensive thing you're ever going to buy.
But so is your health. And so if you go ahead and set up a system where you've got mold growing in your roof assembly, and that's getting into the house, then you're going to end up having health issues long term.
Yep.
You know, it's a higher possibility. So that's why getting the building system right in the very beginning is really important. And designing that from the forefront, using the right framing type of materials, whether that be a TGAI roofing framing member or trusses or traditional rafters, you've got to make sure that, okay, how are you going to insulate that? Is it going to be this flat attic, or is it going to be a cathedral? And usually that's where we see the most errors, is going to be on a cathedral ceiling, because people are trying to maximize the insulation in there but not really giving the right attention to the ventilation channel, or what we've torn apart a lot of assemblies long term where they just had fiberglass in those bays. And you see that the rodent population has decimated things. And just that whole moisture, again, because a lot of times you'll see these cathedral ceilings where you'll have a T&G, tongue and groove wood applied to it with no air barrier. Moisture from the interior of the house is getting up into that assembly, causing a lot of issues, a lot of mold issues. We're working on a house right now with the very same issues. And it's because the whole roofing assembly wasn't designed right. And if it would have been, that whole assembly, not just what I'm putting on for shingles or metal roofing or whatever, but what I'm also putting under on the interior for an air barrier, that's what's got to be really considered here.
So when we're talking about a cold roof and a warm roof, Jim and I are 100% behind that all roofs should be cold roofs. If you are going to build a cathedral ceiling in a house, consider designing a scissor truss. A scissor truss is a type of truss that has a different pitch on the inside than it does on the outside. So you'll have, say, an 8-12 pitch on the inside, and you go to a 10-12 or a 12-12 pitch on the outside. The difference between the inside pitch and the outside pitch allows you to put just a regular cold vented roof, just with fiberglass or cellulose, more likely, or a blown insulation of some kind. And that's what we recommend. If you have a house that already has a cathedral ceiling, and or you have a cape that has knee walls or has slopes, if your roof needs to be replaced, that is not a simple roofing job. And if the roofer says, oh, I can just replace your shingles, even though you have knee walls, even though you have slopes, even though you have cathedrals, we say, hold on a second, that needs a little more attention, because the last time that you're going to have an opportunity to make that assembly better is when the shingles are being replaced. If you need to put rigid insulation on the top of your rafters, that's the time to do it. If you're going to need to put in a breathing channel, that's the time to do it. We have heard hundreds of stories of people where we show up afterwards to do an audit. They've had we're like, okay, well, if you ever have to replace the shingles, it's a great time to do that work. And they're like, oh, we just did it last fall. And we're like, the roofer is responsible for not knowing, A, that that was not the right thing to do, and for selling you a bill of goods that in the end will reduce the longevity of the shingles and the durability of the roof.
And what we're hoping to do with all contractors out there, you know, not one individual is going to be an expert on everything, but we have to work together collectively here to make sure that, as Chris said, a roofer's coming to your house and they're going to look at something, and they shouldn't just be addressing the roofing materials being replaced. It's looking at the house as a system once again, knowing that there's an opportunity that comes once in a few decades that is there now that they can actually address. And yes, it does make the project more expensive, but what is it also aiding the house with? What is it actually allowing you to achieve? And that's going to be proper building performance. Sometimes I've seen it before where we've gone into a certain cape that was over in Georgia, Vermont, and I got up in there. The roof had been replaced the year before, and I stuck my head up in the attic where the roofer had been the year before and looked up there as well. It was full of mold, all different colors of mold, and they had young kids in the house, and they had an attic fan that blew from the house in the end, but when it was turned off, that air, that mold could circulate back in, and the whole thing needed to be replaced. It was an insurance claim, sure, but if the roofer could have just said something at that point in time and said, listen, before we replace this, we got to go ahead and address this too, and not just the problem itself, but what's creating the problem, the proper building science, the air leakage.
And Jim is way too diplomatic on that front. I'm the non-diplomatic one. I say if you're going to be out there swinging a hammer and you're putting roofs on, then you are required by your conscience to know when you apply a certain thing and don't. And if you're doing roofing work on a house that has slopes, that has knee walls, or has cathedral ceilings, then I think you should not be allowed to put a roof on until you know the building science and make sure you're not making a problem worse or not fixing a problem that was originally built into the building. We have Niels here in Duxbury. Niels, how can we help you?
Good afternoon. I'm a builder, lifelong designer and builder, and I work in sort of a rarefied niche where my specifications I use are from Finland. So I understand when you see a project being done here that isn't really up to snuff, and you look at it and you think, well, geez, they should have known, you know, to do it this way instead. That's not what I'm calling about. What about all of the post and beam homes that are where they use SIPs, typically, at least, you know, until probably still today, but maybe until recently, you know, expanded polystyrene?
Yep.
Are they having problems with those?
That's a very good question. So just to make sure that our listeners understand, a SIP is a structurally insulated panel. Basically, it is two pieces of OSB, usually, though sometimes plywood, with a spray foam material between it, whether that's polyiso or whether that's a closed cell spray foam or whether that is something like XPS or EPS. I've seen all different versions of that. And what Niels is basically asking is, do those buildings have the same building science issues that the assemblies that were, you know, site build assemblies like we're talking about? And the answer is, it depends on how well the building was built and how well the splines, which is where the two
panels
come together, how well that's detailed, whether or not the panel is OSB or plywood, because plywood is much more forgiving, and what they're doing on the outside. Are they putting in a venting channel so moisture can get out? And the real answer there, Niels, is we don't know. The real answer is we only find out when someone calls up and says, my assembly is falling apart. And that is a problem. We should have a real answer for you. My answer is, well, I've been working with a couple of builders who do timber frames, and none of them are using SIPs anymore because they're worried about exactly what you're pointing out.
And one thing I'll add, Niels, is the fact that I would still go with venting. A builder called in a few weeks ago with the very question that you just raised, and I said the same thing. Make sure you vent that assembly, because even if everything was great, you still got the SIP panels, which is a plastic. It's a plastic insulation out in the elements, and that top layer is going to be subject to the heating and cooling cycle of the weather, you know, the sunlight and everything else. And, you know, as it heats up the surface of the roof, it's going to affect that material. Allowing there to be a venting channel is going to ensure the longevity of the material at the very least. And so if there is an issue, though, with the splines where they didn't seal up, or there's the foam we've seen,
or there's movement in the house for some reason.
There's movement where they open up, or the foam shrinks over time. We've seen some foam shrink as much as an inch on a big panel like that in all directions. It's a cumulative amount. And when it does that, it opens those same joints back up. So to have that extra bit of protection would be really important to me. For the venting.
I guess that's as good a response as we could ask for, given the variables and the way. I mean, I don't use foam ever. Against the rules for the work I do. But
I agree.
But it's an interesting show. At some point when there's more time, I'd be interested to talk more about the registration of builders, because that's another thing that may or may not affect my business.
Well, Niels, please send us an email to our housecallsvta@gmail.com. And if you aren't yet a member of the Home Builders Association, we could use your voice in the chorus that we're bringing to the State House on exactly these types of issues, and maybe we can get you to testify.
Well, actually, I'm not on purpose. The reason I'm not a member of organizations like that, I'm a member of Vermont Green Building Network, and yep. I was a long time ago member of Vermont Builders for Social Responsibility, WoodNet. I mean, my shop was certified to the FSC for a while. The reason I'm not a Home Builders Association member is what I'm doing is so far off in the weeds from what you guys do every day and what most builders and engineers do that it's almost not, it doesn't really apply. I'm a sauna builder. I've been building freestanding traditional finish style saunas for 30 years.
Awesome.
And I'm also a dealer, and I sell equipment, and, you know, I do all that stuff. But, I mean, the spec I deal with and then the work I do is really, I mean, I love it, but it's nothing like any house you ever saw.
Well, I would counter.
It's a whole different program.
Yeah, I get it. I would counter that by saying we need everyone who's out there building anything and the people who supply them with stuff to have a voice at the table. And, I mean, I'm not trying to force anyone to join the association, but I joined 10 years ago when I first moved to Vermont. And in the 10 years that I've been there tooting my horn about building science, I'm finally getting a lot of response from the builders, and builders are changing.
Positive response.
positive response. Their only reason, well, I'm not going to say I'm the only reason. That's a little too much, you know, patting myself on the back. But I've been there mostly in my lonesome beating the drum about this type of building science thing, and having more voices is only going to help push the entire industry in a direction of using durable building materials, responsibly sourced materials and things of that sort. So I would say we would be better as an association for having your voice there if you were to join. But I understand if you wouldn't want to.
And which, tell me again, I'm sorry, which outfit is it you're talking about?
The Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association.
Yeah.
The VBRA.
Yep. Homebuildersvt.com is the website. You don't have to join, but if you would just, check out our website and consider joining the chorus of voices that's getting louder and louder on the building science side, we'd certainly love to have you.
I'd want to talk my soapbox conversation would have to do with if you're a builder or an architect and you're going to do a sauna, find somebody that knows the ropes a little bit.
Hallelujah.
Agreed.
Hallelujah.
Unless you speak or read Finnish, getting good information is really hard.
Yeah.
And I see lots of very well-intentioned projects that just are there's problems. They've got to be solved. So anyway, good show, guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Niels.
I guess that's the first time we've had a Finnish carpenter
on
our radio show.
Oh.
With that, I know we're a little past time, but I did want to add one thing. Why it is so important as you're moving through with your projects, especially in the older roof assemblies. When I say older, I've seen 1978 homes that were just underframed. But even some of the older structures where you just didn't have traditional spacing or structural members in the roof assembly. If you go tighten things up and you stop the heat loss problem and the icicle problem, you will effectively, the house will start to carry possibly a heavier snow load. And so making sure that when the building assessment is being done by a professional who understands building science through the EEN group at Efficiency Vermont, if you have somebody out there to look at that, they're going to be able to look at the structure and say, listen, if we do this, we have to make sure that we're beefing up the framing. That can be done inside the attic, because you don't want to go ahead and make a bigger issue because the snow load, you got like a Valentine's Day 2013, was it?
Yeah.
3 foot of snow, and all of a sudden it's
too much for the roof.
Too much for the roof, and it starts to stress the framing members too much. So once again, go to Efficiency Vermont, look up a contractor that's there on the network and get the home assessed appropriately. For
house
sure.
as a whole system includes structural. We'll just throw that out there. So this is Chris West for House Calls Vermont with my colleague Jim Bradley. Thank you so much for taking your time out this afternoon to listen to us. We're going to be passing it back to Joel and get back to music. But we'll be back not next week, but the week after that.
Yeah.
Because next week is basketball. And have a good late winter. And we'll see you as we get closer to the spring.
Have a great day, everybody.
House Calls Vermont, brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing. ShamrockPaintingCompany.com. RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Sticks and Stuff in Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Edensburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber. There's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basementy. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association, homebuildersvt.com. Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it all, online at polyconstruction.com. Join us 2 weeks from now at 12:30 for House Calls Vermont.